thank you for joining us for Nevada Backcountry on 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk this weekend. Man, it's been a bit since I saw you, Dave. We had to do a rerun last weekend.
Yeah. I had some kind of a syphilated pneumonia or something. I don't know what it was. I was sick.
A syphilated, yeah. I don't know if I'd admit that on air.
Yeah, don't you? Yeah.
No, you went to a wedding, got super sick.
Oh, yeah. I went to my son's wedding. Congratulations, David, Paul, and Lauren.
Hey, now, congrats.
The newest Mr. and Mrs. Catalano. It was fantastic, but yeah, I came home, 200 people, handshaking, you know, booger
mouth
high
kisses.
Fives, mouth kisses, you know, cheek licking, stuff like that. And I came home with something.
And you never get sick?
No.
You haven't been sick since I've known you.
Yeah, no, the wife was pretty, she was like, what the heck is your problem? Yeah. I wanted to sleep for 2 days. It was fantastic, and so I appreciate you covering duties and such and doing your stuff. But you got some pretty cool stuff happening right now, this weekend.
This weekend, we are recording ahead of schedule this week because as this goes to air, I'm going to be out flinging some lead at, I always get it backwards. It's not performance, it's shooting Performance Institute.
Yes.
Jim Irwin's company. I'm going to be out doing the intro to long range course. Hopefully I'm not upset at this point and I'm actually hitting what I'm aiming at. But
oh, you will. I've been out to the course.
Fingers crossed.
You know what you're doing.
Yeah. You know what you're doing. I'm taking, in fact, coming up on the show, we'll get into a little bit about, I've got an upcoming moose hunt in Canada and we got a question. Gosh, it was a while back now, but the first time I talked about the hunt, about what's your setup for a multi-species hunt? Because we're going to be doing moose, wolf, and potentially whitetail or mule deer.
Yeah, so you got one of the biggest, well, the
biggest to like small.
Yeah, the biggest to just about the smallest.
We'll go into that stuff. I'm going to be shooting my setup, or I am shooting my setup right now as this goes to air. Before we dive into wolves, mountain lion trapping, moose hunting setup, etc., a shout out to Mike at Battleborn Tree Service. I finally got a picture. 389-inch green score on that bully killed.
Yeah, that thing was amazing.
I sent
that
you a picture, yeah.
Holy moly.
That was a good one.
That gets the hair on you kind of tingling a bit. That was
it was a great bull.
Great bull.
And I didn't add context to the picture, but Mike is not a small guy.
No.
And yeah, so like, when you see the picture, it's like, oh yeah, you look at him and you're like, hey, he could be 5'5", 5'6". Yeah,
4.
He's a big guy.
He's a big dude.
Anyway, diving right into wolf sightings near Lake Tahoe, Dave.
Yeah, do we want to touch base on the collar thing real quick?
Oh, let me back up. Yeah. What happens when you shoot a collared animal?
So this came up. A friend of mine shot a beautiful bull elk.
It's a good bull, too.
Really nice bull elk in Jarbidge.
Right.
And it ended up having a collar on it. So he went into a panic. At first, he was like, uh-oh. He thought he may have been in trouble for shooting a collared animal.
Right. Understandable, yeah.
Understandable, because he was like, oh, that this might be bad. But you're not in trouble. You can shoot collared animals. The thing is once the collar has to go back to the Nevada Department of Wildlife because those are satellite collars. They're constantly taking data. They acquire that data once a week-ish, depending on the satellite program that they have for downloads. But they'd probably be contacting you anyway when the elk is in your neighborhood, you know, because it'll still transmit even though it's in your freezer.
So
your best bet is to contact the Department of Wildlife. Right now, there are moose that are collared, elk that are collared, bighorn sheep that are collared, mountain lions that are collared, and mule deer that are collared. So you end up harvesting any of those species, contact the Department of Wildlife. They will get you in touch with the person that is in charge or running that particular program, the moose, the elk, the deer, the mountain lion, the sheep program, and then they'll have you bring the collar down to the Department of Wildlife so that it can be reused and then shut off because the animal's not attached to it any longer, and then all the data can be analyzed.
You know, I've never thought about that in the context of mule deer, elk, big game species like that.
Yeah.
Obviously, not the most prevalent, but the one I'm familiar with would be collars on mountain lions.
Yeah.
But yeah, I've never thought about that before. And I'm assuming, hey, if it's the, it's a good bull like your friend killed and it's the herd bull, yeah, you're not going to pass on it just because it has a collar on it.
No, and like I said, you can shoot a collared animal. There's nothing in the regs or anything
totally
that says,
above board.
Yeah, completely above board. It's just kind of like, you know, when you're out duck hunting or goose hunting and you're generally sometimes you're aiming for the animal with the
band,
something like that. So it's similar situation. Just notify the department. Usually there's some information on the collar itself. It'll be stamped in or depending on how long the collar's been there or on the animal, that stuff can then
wear off.
Off, and especially with bulls when they're get real aggressive and stuff. But
so your friend did not know it was. It wasn't like he had a targeted bull that he knew was collared. It was just he shot it and then went, oh.
Yeah, I mean he spotted it, and that nice of a bull, you're not like checking out his entire body. Like, okay, what's he
right,
doing?
Right. And I'm assuming rifle hunt?
Yeah, it was a rifle hunt.
So he was a ways away when he shot it. Okay.
Yeah, he was a distance away. He shot it, went up on it, and noticed that it had a collar. Because the collar's brown. Its fur is brown.
Right.
Its fur is long. So it was, in a sense, it was somewhat camouflaged, especially from a couple hundred yards out.
Did he send you a panic text or something? Yeah, what did I do?
He called me, and then he texted me. He's like, dude, I need to talk to you. And so I got a hold of him, and I said, oh, fine, just
turn it in.
Yeah,
or
contact
this
person. I didn't realize that there are hunters out there that don't realize that you can harvest an animal with a collar on.
Just kind of a blind spot. I've never really thought about it. Again, with mule deer and elk, I know there are collared animals out there. I'm assuming, me being me, I would go, okay, well, this is like a mountain lion, or like you use the example of waterfowl. I'm going to kill this animal. It's my target animal.
Yeah.
All right, now, I almost jumped into this ahead of the collared thing, but there have been some wolf sightings in Hope Valley, right down the road from us, south of Tahoe there, kind of where it's where 88 and 89 split.
Yeah, it's 20 miles outside of South Lake Tahoe. And there's been several sightings in Hope Valley. The last one was a group of four wolves. And it's not, California Fish and Game has not confirmed.
Oh, they haven't. See, I thought they had.
They, at this point in time, they have not confirmed it.
Okay.
Even though there's some pretty awesome pictures of the animals, and they definitely look like wolves. Without a doubt, they look like wolves. But until they do their own due diligence, they're putting out, right now they've got hair snares. That was, they used that technique on the wolverines that were near like North Star.
Oh, yeah,
Several years ago, there was a male wolverine that showed up like 4 years in a row up there.
We know there's that established Lassen pack.
Well, there's seven. There's
seven known, established packs.
Seven known established wolf packs in the state of California right now. There was a picture, and there's a sighting of four animals cruising together. It would be the eighth known pack of wolves in the state of California.
Now, I'll be interested to see if they, you know, once the study's done, I'm assuming, based on the pictures, I'm assuming they're going to confirm it is, in fact, gray
wolves.
I'd
assume so, yeah.
You know, that whole, like, as you're going up by Red Lakes and all that, I mean, that is a deer migration corridor.
Oh, yeah.
There are a lot of bears in there.
There's a lot of bears in there.
So that'll be interesting to see if they actually set up shop and establish a pack up there, or if there's too much competition.
Right, and that was one thing I was kind of thinking about, because I'm thinking, like, what is their, what's their base? What's their prey base?
And it's got to be deer up there.
It'd be deer, I'd assume, and it's not a large herd. You know, if there's too much competition, what else is up there? I mean, they could move into the South Lake Tahoe area, because there's a whole lot of domestic pets.
I'd see them cruising down into that south end of Gardnerville.
Yeah, that,
with all the cattle and everything.
Yeah, I mean,
down through there.
Until California does their work and establish, you know, like IDs, like, yep, we got wolves in the area. What they do from there, I don't know, because gray wolves are on the endangered species list.
Well, we'll keep everybody posted on that, and we'll see what the California Department of Fish and Wildlife, CDFW, we'll see what they release once the study concludes. coming up on the show, let's get into this petition on the mountain lion trapping, and then we'll go into moose and setups for my hunt. Don't go anywhere. Stay tuned to Nevada Backcountry on 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. If you're just joining us, the show is Nevada Backcountry on 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. If you missed the first segment or you missed a past episode of the show, you can go to 991fmtalk.com, click on the podcast tab, or if you're an Apple user, we are on Apple Podcasts. Just search for Nevada Backcountry. And thank you to Legacy Sports International, I always say home of the Howa Superlight. Look, they offer a variety of products. Dave kills Chucker with one of their escort shotguns.
Heck yeah.
I think they've got the pointer, over-unders, side-by-sides, whole lineup of Howa rifles. Go check them out. It's LegacySportsInternational.com. Before we get into this petition for mountain lion trapping limitations or whatever, Dave, you were just saying the past.
Yeah, so I know the last segment I mentioned the gray wolves are on the endangered and threatened list.
Well, right.
They are, but there is an exception. The exception is that the Northern Rocky Mountain population is not. They are not part of the threatened and endangered group.
So what's the management practice there? You can't hunt them.
No, it's just that they're, I'm not really sure why they're,
that
specific exemption, you know, because it just states with the exemption of the North Rocky Mountain population, protection under the Endangered Species Act is threatened. And then Minnesota, they're only threatened. They're not endangered.
Oh, yeah. That's the largest. There's always been a large population of wolves up in Minnesota.
Yeah, yeah. So they're only threatened there. And then the rest of the states remain in the endangered. That was it, just to touch base.
Clarify.
Yeah, you know, if anyone's wanting to know.
Oh, yeah, and somebody will send us an email. And there was a petition, or there is a petition, urging Nevada to reform trapping rules to protect mountain lions.
Correct.
So I saw this news story. I read a little bit on it. Right off the bat, I did not like the fact that Wild Earth Guardians is involved in it.
I think they're the ones that did the petition.
Yes.
Yeah.
So right off the bat, that is an extremist, anti-hunting, we should all live in teepees, and I don't like that organization, period.
Yeah, because there were three organizations that submitted the petition. It was the Wild Earth Guardians, Mountain Lion Foundation, and the Nevada Wildlife Alliance submitted a petition to protect mountain lions.
I don't know anything about two of those. I'm going to assume if they're in bed with the Wild Earth Guardians. Wild Earth Guardians, for those that don't know, is borderline Earth First, like the lunatics that chain themselves to redwoods and all that. Yeah. Lunatic organization. So trying to have an open mind on this and just look at it for what it is and not immediately recoil and go, I hate these people. I hate this. This sucks. Talk to me a little bit about the petition as far as what rules do they want to reform as far as trapping goes.
The petition outlines eight recommendations, all of which are not only common sense, but policies important to protecting mountain lions.
Okay.
So they're common sense, dude.
Yeah, don't you know? I don't have too much of that.
Whatever. Yeah. Now, you know, number one is to shorten the amount of time between trap checks from 96 hours to 24 hours, which that would be very, very difficult.
Yeah.
For a lot of trappers out there that have arrays that are not next door to their homes.
Oh, yeah.
So that would be tough. Acquire the proper size of trap for the intended animal. That's another tough one because sometimes you may be out trapping and you're trapping anything from a pine marten to a fox.
Right.
To a large fox. So
the whole thing with trapping, right, is you're setting a trap, whatever type of trap it is, you're setting it with the intent. Obviously, you study the environment around that and you figure, okay, this is what I'm attempting to trap. But it's not like a command released bow and arrow or so, you know what right. I'm saying? Like, it's yeah. not like you can say, oh, well, that's not my intended species. I'm not going to trap that.
Right. That's the tough part about this petition is that there's a lot of this isn't common sense.
Right.
They started out as the petition is to protect mountain lions from unintended consequences. Well, how do you calculate unintended consequences?
Right.
You know, when you, that's a tough one. I mean, you could put a little sign in front of the trap that says, yeah. if you are not these three species, please walk around.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, yeah. that would work. So the third one, it require swivels on the trap so that the animal can move, you know, within, or how,
yeah,
that,
yeah, yeah,
how
yeah.
that, like a leash. Like a leash of some
Well,
sort?
Like the typical, what most people are probably familiar with, like a foot trap.
Yeah.
Right? Like it's on a chain anyway.
Yeah,
so
that's
does not,
staked in.
Yeah, does that not count as a swivel? Or
I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know.
All right, keep
so
going.
Then number four is to ban the use of drags, which are weighted components connected to the trap that allow the animal to distance themselves from the trap but not escape. But
yeah.
That's another one. Like,
I'm familiar with some of that stuff for like beaver trapping.
Yeah. I mean, it's just a long chain that's attached, that's right. staked down. Next one is to ban the use of multiple sets of traps placed near each other to decrease the likelihood of a mountain lion getting multiple limbs trapped at the same time.
Well, how else are you going to trap it? No, I'm kidding. I'm like, what? Okay. So you that can't one, run I an mean, actual trap line?
Yeah, I guess that one makes sense if the traps are only 3 feet apart. And
oh, like a minimum distance or something.
Yeah, that's what it kind of sounds okay. like. They want more distance between your traps so that if Mr. Mountain Lion gets trapped by a paw, it doesn't, you know, freak out, run around,
and then
a
get
drag
something else
or something,
caught.
And then get a hind foot caught in another trap that's next to it. Sixth one is require traps to be secured to the ground with a chain no less than 30 inches so that non-target animals like mountain lions would be able to pull free if caught. What's the chain have to do with the
whether or not it can pull free
or the trap itself? What would 30 inches of chain
Well, and again, so the animal can pull free. This is where I'm going with all, like the last one, right? Is all this stuff.
Once it's trapped, you don't want it pulling free.
Exactly.
I mean, that's why these traps are designed that way.
So you'd rather have it wounded and crippled up, running around the mountains and suffering versus, hey, 72 hours later, here comes Trapper Bill and he's got a, yeah. It's just lunacy.
That one I can't wrap my head around because the chain has nothing to do with the animal being able to
pull
release
free.
Itself.
Yeah.
So, okay, six is different.
Yeah.
Require ongoing trapping education for anyone applying for a trapping license. That already happens.
Yeah.
And improve and increase the collection of data about non-target species. Well, that's already done as well.
Yeah.
Trappers have to report anything that gets in their trap.
Yeah.
Now, it's up to them to be honest and provide that information. There's not somebody out there regulating that or
right, right. Or, there's not like a check station
well,
out
yeah,
in the Santa
or
Rosa
or
anything.
It, like, yeah. So that's really up to the trapper themselves to be an
They're
honest
supposed to
trapper.
Do it already.
Yeah,
yeah,
to be an honest trapper and say, hey, I caught XYZ, which I wasn't supposed to catch, so.
Okay, and what's the last one?
That was
or
it.
That was it.
That was eight. That's all eight of them. So.
Okay, so just right on the surface, all this stuff seems kind of ludicrous to me. Okay, correct me if I'm wrong. A mountain lion is classified as a big game species in the state of Nevada, correct?
Right. And, yeah.
It's not classified as a fur bearer.
Correct. No,
so I don't know anybody except state hired or federal fish
hired.
And wildlife officers or federal whatever management specialists, whatever the name for them is. I don't know anybody outside of those people actively trapping mountain lions.
There aren't any.
You can't.
No, and the only reason that the federal services does anything with mountain lions is if there's a report of them repeatedly taking, you know, livestock in some way, shape,
right.
or form, they'll send out a licensed federal hunter to get rid of that particular mountain lion.
Or like in the Granites where there was a huge overpopulation.
Right.
There was the guy out there. He pulled like 17 or 18 out of there.
Right.
But again, that's a government official, right, someone who does this for a living doing it. So I don't understand what this, my point in all this rambling is basically, first off, as soon as I saw the organization name, I knew this was going to be some sort of anti-hunting or anti-trapping measure. But when you read all of this stuff, it's like, okay, it's a solution looking for a problem. They're coming up with this thing like, hey, here's our solution to this problem that may or may not exist and technically is illegal anyway because you can't trap mountain lions.
Right. It's not an intended species to be trapped because they are not considered a fur bear. You can't trap.
Right.
It is a non-target species and cannot be trapped in the state of Nevada. It is not. So thing is trappers aren't going out looking for them.
No.
It is an incidental take. So there's already things that
there are protections in print, in law.
And the best you possibly can do. I mean,
right.
Maybe there's some in here that could be modified or better addressed.
We're out of time for this segment. Don't go anywhere. Stay tuned to 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk, and we will be right back on Nevada Backcountry. Welcome back to Nevada Backcountry on 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. Thank you to Truck Envy for sponsoring the show. Maybe you guys want a camper shell or a bed rug. You plan on sleeping in the back of your truck during chucker season. Go see Andy and the crew at Truck Envy on South Virginia there in Reno. Diving right back into where we left off. Oh,
yeah, no,
you're saying well.
I just want to say that Truck Envy, man, I really appreciate you guys sold me a set of tracks.
Recovery boards.
Boards.
Yeah, okay.
I recommend everybody carry recovery boards.
I'm slacking on that.
In your truck when you're out and about.
See, I've got a tow strap, a shovel.
Yeah, but if you don't have anyone to tow you.
Exactly. I was going to say, I'm so spoiled with that Tundra. I've got it lifted a little bit. It gets me through anything, that Gen 1 Tundra I've got. But yeah, I've gotten stuck before.
Those boards, for whatever they were, $100 or so.
I mean,
they are a lifesaver. So anyway, go to Truck Envy, pick up some recovery boards. They're awesome.
That might be my next stop.
They're easy to stash. So, all right.
Okay. So we'll do a quick little thing, wrap up on the mountain lion trapping. You know, just reading through this here, Dave and I were both kind of scratching our heads going, all these proposals, it's like I said, tell me you've never seen a trap without actually telling me you've never seen a trap. None of this stuff makes any sense. And like I said in that last segment, it's like a solution looking for a problem. Nobody's out there outside of, again, the couple government agencies. Nobody's out there targeting mountain lions with traps. It's illegal in the first place. Then if there is a, I'll use a fishing term, bycatch or whatever, you get out there and it's like, whoa, that's a mountain lion in my trap. There are policies and procedures in place for dealing with that if that happens. So I see you staring intently at the paper.
Yeah.
Let me have it. What saith you?
You know, it's just one of those scenarios where you've got the folks who are putting on the petition, and in their world, everything that they say and everything that they've read about and written about is gospel. And
right, and
they don't understand how people don't understand where they're coming from. And then there's the other side that has not technically 180 degree different view of it, but they have a different view of it,
right,
and can look at some of their stuff and just go, no, that's not how it works. You know, like they stayed in here how important it is to have a balanced mountain lion population. You know, they maintain ecosystem health, you know, and all of this stuff. And they don't realize that Nevada, we don't have a balanced mountain lion population.
I mean,
it's insanely high population, but the bulk of them are male. I mean, it's the male to female ratio is completely out of whack.
Yeah.
So it's not a balanced mountain lion.
here's my thing on most of these. When they start a petition or whatever, they're out looking for signatures. These things are written by the REI crowd that did a two-week backpacking trip through Yosemite, went on an ayahuasca spirit journey, and are now in touch with nature versus talk to any guide or outfitter in the state of Nevada who spends 200 plus days a year in the mountains, and they will tell you there's more mountain lions than there's ever been. Yeah. But again, some idiot wearing a neon-colored down vest is going to tell me, no, the outfitter's wrong, man.
Yeah.
We need to be in harmony. Like, it, the whole thing drives me crazy. I might have to edit
some of
that.
Is that your opinion? Is that your opinion? I mean, I'm not sure if it's that strong of an opinion, but no.
People,
no,
and people couldn't see me gesticulating wildly.
I was watching him like he was Kramer on Seinfeld with all the body movements and gestures.
Oh, man.
And,
I get so hot.
The beauty of our system, it allows people, like you're stating, to provide their opinion and then have it go through a system, you know, of checks and balances and stuff. And when it is fairly out of whack, it's not a bad thing to go through those processes, because then you start to realize like, hey, what we're doing the right thing, or we may modify it here and there. So it's kind of a checks and balances thing. You got to have people throw absolute crazy knuckleball curves at you.
Fair enough.
Once in a while. You know, some of this is pretty insane.
When's the date? Hang on real quick, because this is coming up. If you are in Reno, I think it's November 15th.
Correct. It's the next commission meeting here on November 15th, which probably next week we'll be going. If I can find it and get it, and if it's available, we'll be going through the agenda, you know, which we do every time, so we can go through that. But yeah, it's the November.
Okay, I think I saw on there November 15th, but fact check me on that. And in fact, hey, shout out to Phil, our afternoon news guy on KKFT. He's the one that pointed my nose in this direction and said, hey, have you heard about this? What do you think? I was a little more even keeled when I said, man, this is dumb, Phil. I didn't go on my wild arms waving, I hate these people thing.
Well, and it, you know, from a lot of this petition and some of the generalization of this document, it really seems to me that their major push is the 96-hour trap check window. That seems to be the bulk of this petition, because they mention it numerous times throughout the documents. To be honest, I mean, that's not an unheard of recommendation. I mean, it is the longest period of time in
the West,
entire Western U.S. You know, a lot of other states have like a 72-hour window.
72-hour could be done, but again, hey, Wyoming, there are places in Montana, northern Idaho, it's pretty vast. Colorado. Yeah. But I mean, I think the reality is, living where we live, I err on the side. I am not a trapper. I have friends that do it. I've been around it before. However, let's say, hey, you're at that, right at the end of that time limit, and a storm rolls through the mountains or something. Like, I err on the side of give the benefit of the doubt to the person doing this. And if they legitimately cannot make it out there for 96 hours, I think that's a totally reasonable window.
Mean, there's definitely some leeway in relation to accessibility. I mean, if you have a storm that runs through and dumps 3 feet of snow and you can't drive your truck or UTV or whatever up a canyon, I don't care what you do, you ain't getting up there.
No.
You know, so yeah, in those situations, you have a reason. It's not like, well, you know, I really wanted to go fishing with the guys, so I figured a couple more days wouldn't be a big deal.
No, right.
Okay, now we got a problem. But if they actually made an attempt and said, dude, I 3-4 feet of snow,
I can't get up there.
Yeah. So it took me a couple more days. I had to go borrow a snowmobile or a track machine to get in there. And then what's the harm? Because they're 3 feet under the snow.
Yeah.
But still.
A conversation could be had.
Yeah, people, they have a legitimate reason why they couldn't get to their trap line in the required amount of time. And that makes sense.
Well, and we all know game wardens are the most flexible people. No, I got to edit that out. Yeah, I could see that. If they want to have a conversation on that bit, then November 15th in Reno at the commission meeting, show up, voice yay or nay, you know.
And if you don't show up, it is you can watch it on a live feed and
submit questions.
And you can submit questions live right then and there. You just hit your chat button.
Yeah, so help me God.
Yeah, so they'll hit that, and then they can you can provide your question. But it's okay. It's one of those things. We're going to be seeing a lot of stuff like this over the next bunch of years. There's a lot of groups out there. You know, we were talking about the one earlier where they are trying to eliminate hunting of certain species, and they're shooting with the low-hanging fruit stuff.
Always, always.
So you've got that stuff coming up. You have other folks that are trying to attack certain weapon types. So these types of petitions are going to be coming down the pike.
I've said it before, man. More. Growth in our area is coming from that Bay Area, the tech crowd. And the bottom line is, even if they maybe politically align with you, they are still not familiar with some of the trapping, the hunting, that sort of thing we do out here. You know, I know a lot of quote unquote conservatives that are on the side of the fence for the quote unquote wild horses. And it just makes me scratch my head. And then you figure out they're from Palo Alto or something, and you go, oh, well, there we go, light bulb. So anyway, hey, I'm looking at the time. We got to take a break here on Nevada Backcountry. Do not touch the dial. Stay tuned to 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. Final segment of Nevada Backcountry on 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk.
Yeah, let's get into something that doesn't raise blood pressure.
Yeah, man. You know, I drank some caffeine before we started.
Yeah, I know. I just finished my coffee. I feel like, dude, I needed to grab another one. But
I didn't. If you resemble any of the remarks I've made, I'll apologize in advance. I think for people that know me, I feel like I'm a pretty easy guy to get along with. I got a diverse friend group from backcountry skiing to hunting to whatever, but I do get a little quarrelsome, I guess would be the right word, when it comes to some of this stuff where it's like, man, I'm not trying to infringe on your right to drive a Prius. Don't infringe on my right to go out and hunt or trap how I see fit.
It's that old adage is of, you know, respect the people that are around you and accept them for who they are instead of being so judgmental. I mean, you've been through it the same as me where, you know, you get kind of cornered or something and you get called a murderer and a killer and all of this stuff. And you're just like, why? What? Yeah. Like, was that really important?
I'm still a young enough guy. I mean, I'm turning 40 here soon. But
oh, I'm turning 40.
That wasn't a shot at you, Dave. But, you know, I'm still young. There's still a low to moderate amount of testosterone flowing through my veins. And I do get, you know, when backed into a corner or when I perceive some sort of slight, I get a little loud about it. And it's like, come on, man.
I guess that does make sense, the testosterone thing, because my T is probably pretty low. So whenever there's an altercation, I just think about pudding or slippers.
Yeah, you know, hey, I can't even remember the last physical. God, it's been decades and decades and decades. Generally speaking, like, hey, if we're in a bar and something happens, I'm the guy that's like, man, I just wanted to have a couple beers and have a good time. I'm out of here. I'm not interested in that.
My last altercation is when I tripped into a bush. Couldn't get out of it.
Nice. Nice. Hey, all so right, let's end on, I've got a moose hunt coming up in Canada. It's actually a multi-species hunt. So I got a question about this from a listener as far as what do you bring for a multi-species hunt? Everything from wolf to moose. So you're talking about I won't call it small, but a mid-sized, thin-skinned animal versus an extra large, thick-skinned animal.
Massive boned.
Massive boned, hunting those bogs and stuff up there where the reality is, hey, you may be faced with a 500-600-yard shot, and that's all you're getting because you're not crossing the neck-deep bog to get it.
Yeah, that bog or that tundra.
Right. So what I settled on is a 7 PRC. Very similar to a 7 Remington mag. However, the rate of twist in the barrel for the gun that I'm shooting is a 1 in 8. So what that means is for every 8 inches of barrel, the rifling makes one complete twist. Sure. Versus like my 7 Remington mag that I love that gun. That gun shoots best with that like 140 to about 160 grain bullet. It's like a 1 in 9.5 rate of twist in the barrel. So with my 7 PRC, I'm shooting a 175 grain bullet. Pat actually went to the range with me and shot
last week.
Yeah, and it's super accurate. Good grief. Pat shot like a 1.8 inch group at 300 yards.
Was that with his 325?
No, that was with my guy. He was shooting my 7 PRC.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Very similar ballistics to a 7 Remington mag. However, I can run those heavier 175 grain bullets, no stabilization issues. And the gun that I have that's a 7 PRC is very lightweight. So I don't, you know, I'm not going to be sucking carrying like a 10, 12 pound gun. Jim, I know you're not listening, so I can make that joke because I'm shooting with you right now. Jim would make fun of me and tell me that his wife, Annalise, carries like a 14 pound rifle. I ain't no Annalise. I like a 8 pound rifle. I'm taking that. I'm taking a 3-10x42. It's a Night Force SHV scope. I have higher powered scopes, but again, it's that mixed terrain where, yeah, 500 or 600 yard shot is entirely possible. It's also thick woods up there. So I don't want one of these like 5-20 or something where the lowest power I can get is a 5.
Right.
So that's the scope I'm taking. I don't feel like it limits me at all with some of these longer shots if I have to take them. The reticle in the scope is, I forget what it's called, it's like the Night Force More or something. It's got calibrated drop. They're stadium marks is what they're called, but everybody
like
calls them hashtags.
Yeah, that's what's on the scope, my scope.
Exactly.
Yeah, which I love that. I love that capability.
So that's what I'm figuring out today on the range with Jim is I'm shooting the load I'm going to be using, the bullet I'm going to be using, the rifle I'm going to be using. And the whole goal of me doing this course is so that by the time I'm done, I feel 100% confident out to 1,000 yards with this gun. And there's no questions as far as, hey, a moose steps out at 538 and we can't get across the bog in time to get a shot on it. I know what 538 is on that gun because I've been doing it all weekend now.
Now, you feel okay because, you know, trying to find a gun that's all around you.
Yeah.
A wolf pops out, you're going to whack it with that PRC.
7 PRC, yep.
Just go for it with the 170 grain. Just use the same setup because, you know, I know how well we have people carry two guns.
Yeah, here's the big thing. Here's the big thing that I'm dealing with right now, Dave. And this is why I'm not taking my 375, which is a phenomenal moose gun if you want to anchor them right there.
Yeah,
but
that's big dope. Man, I shot that one when we went out. Was that the gun you brought at one time?
I did. I don't think we shot it, though. You shot Pat's 325.
Oh, his 320, yeah. My God. My Lord, that's a whole lot of gun.
Well, and when you're talking about a 270 grain to 300 grain projectile out of a 375 H&H, I'm not reaching out to 400 or 500 yards on a wolf with that. I'm just not.
Well,
it's not
in half.
It's not set up for that.
No.
It's just not. So, you know, okay, so yeah, a 375 would be great for a moose. It ain't great for wolf. So I settled on that 7 PRC because it's like what I'll call not like a stupid big time, like a 300 rum or something like that. But it's also not like a 25-06 or something that you might feel undergunned for moose. So 7 PRC was a happy medium.
I'd be very uncomfortable with a 25-06 on a moose.
I killed a bison with one. No, well, I did, but
not by choice.
No.
Not by choice, by ammunition choice.
Well, and so I know there's a friend of ours who lives up in Alaska that listens to the show, John Eby.
Yep, John Eby. Hey, buddy.
And John Eby's probably listening to this going, you idiots, you lower 48 idiots.
You know it. You know it.
You know
he's probably
that.
Throwing something or is throwing his phone.
Yeah. I said, probably. But, you know, he's probably going, hey, the most common round for moose in Alaska is a 243. Well, fair enough. If you're shooting it 50 yards off your front porch and you're strictly hunting for meat, they do use 243 a lot up there.
I think the moose he shot this year or last year, it was a 243.
That's the most popular round for Alaskans doing the subsistence hunting.
The subsistence hunting when you're shooting it 30 yards off the road.
Right.
Or off of a road.
Yes. Yeah. And that's not what I'm doing. So 7 PRC is what I gave the nod to. It's about 6 pounds without a scope or anything, just bare rifle. It's got a muzzle brake on there, so that tames some of that 7 PRC recoil. Fully kitted out, carbon bipod, Night Force scope on there, full magazine, 3 rounds in it. It's right at like 8-ish pounds.
Now what's your dad bringing?
My dad is bringing his Howa 1500 in 6.5 PRC.
Oh,
It's a carbon barreled Howa. It's what he killed his moose
last year.
Last year. Yeah.
Okay, so he's bringing that same rifle. Okay.
Same exact gun.
It did it the first time.
Exactly. And he likes that 6.5 PRC. In Sweden, most of those countries over there, they love that 6.5 by 5.5. That's their moose round. You get those longer, high sectional density bullets. So 6.5 PRC, Creedmoor might be a little light. The PRC has a lot more powder. It's much more similar to like a 6.5 by 55 round.
And then the Grendel's even smaller.
The Grendel's even smaller, yeah. Yep. So the Grendel's even smaller. So my dad's running, I want to say he's running like a 143 grain ELDX bullet. But hey, it performed last time for him.
Yeah.
It's what he's comfortable shooting.
He's got a freezer full of it.
That's what he's taking. I'm going with the 7 PRC. And no knock against, I love the Remington Mag. It's just the gun I have in 7 PRC got the nod as far as weight and everything. That's it for us today on Nevada Backcountry. I hope that answered the listener question. Dave, any final thoughts?
Yeah, you know, anyone out there, if you've got some questions or just want to comment.
It's good to talk to you.
Yeah, it's always good talking to you. But it would be really nice to hear some other folks, their views on this particular petition, as well as the wolf issue. So feel free to text us, email us. But other than that, everyone have a fantastic rest of your day. And then coming up next is Tom Gresham with Gun Talk.